Yes. Well, I think one word in my title got lost somewhere during transmission. The title was Categorical Structure in the Representation Theory of Conformal Field Theory. The point being that categories appear in the representation theory of conformal field theories as I use them, but not in the formulation of these theories themselves. But on the other hand, I decided to spend most time on the categorical structures themselves, so I won't be very precise anyway on what I mean by a conformal field theory. I'm just telling you towards the end of my talk how the categorical structures appear and arise in conformal field theory. Okay, so let C be a tensor category and gamma m eta a monoid in this category. Then you know that you can define three categories of modules, left, right, and bimodules in C. And if C has coequalizers, then the bimodule category is in fact monoidal. But in this monoidal category, I'm not interested. I want to have monoidal categories of left modules. Now, there is a classical thing. If C is a symmetric category and your monoid is commutative, then the category of left modules is in fact, again, a symmetric monoidal category. I don't know who first considered this, but for example, Delin makes serious use of this in his 1989 paper in the Grothendieck fast drift. And in this situation, you have a strong monoidal, in fact, symmetric monoidal tensor functor from C to the category of left modules, which is this free module functor. But I will be interested in braided categories now. So if C is braided and your monoid is commutative, then you obtain a tensor category of left modules in the precisely the same way as in the symmetric case. But in general, this category will not be braided. More precisely, the braiding doesn't lift. The braiding of C doesn't lift to the category of left gamma modules in the same way as it would do in the symmetric case. But still, you have this strong monoidal functor from C to the category of left modules. Now, in a paper which appeared in 1995 in Journal of Algebra, Pareiges proposed to consider a full subcategory of the left modules, which he called the dyslexic modules. That is, the subcategory whose objects are those modules where the module map satisfies this condition on the right-hand side. As a diagram, if this is your map, the module map, it means that these two compositions with the braiding coincide. So as far as mu is concerned, the category looks symmetric. And then Pareiges showed that this modular category is in fact braided. Okay, so before I'm going to tell you where we are heading, let me give you some more simple definitions. Let C be a braided tensor category and D a subset of objects, or what is the same, a full subcategory. Then we can define the centralizer of D to be the full subcategory of C, whose objects are given by this condition. So the objects in the centralizer are those which commute with all objects in D, whereby commute, I mean this condition on the braiding. And once we have this definition, it is clear that we can define the center of a braided monoidal category to be the centralizer of C itself. But be aware that this center has nothing to do with the center of a monoidal category as it has appeared in other talks. This is why I put a subscript 2 there. Okay, it is clear that the center of a braided category is symmetric and the category coincides with the center precisely if it is symmetric. Now, if you have a commutative monoid in your braided category and gamma is in the center, then it is clear that the dyslexic modules coincide with the full category of modules. So this is an intermediate case between the symmetric case and the construction discussed by Pareiges. And in this form, it has been rediscovered by Bruguière in the year 2000, who used it for some other purposes. And in full generality, the definition of Pareiges has again been rediscovered by Kirillov and Ostrich, Kirillov Jr. and Ostrich in the year 2000, who were interested in applications to conformal field theory. But since they work with vertex operator algebras, which are technically very difficult to handle, they can't give rigorous proof for the claims they are making and refer to future publications. So now I can tell you what the aim of this talk is. First of all, we can ask ourselves whether there are situations where the full category of left modules, and not just the dyslexic modules, is braided, of course, then in some generalized sense. And having answered this question to the affirmative in a certain case, I will tell you how all these structures arise very naturally in conformal field theory. But okay, I wish to introduce some more terminology. A Frobenius algebra in a tensor category is a quintuple, where gamma m eta is a monoid in C, gamma delta epsilon is a co-monoid, and these structures satisfy this additional condition. Note that this definition makes sense in any tensor category. You don't need a braiding to formulate that. As to the history, I couldn't really say who came up with this notion first. I have seen it first in a paper by Frank Quinn, which appeared in 95, and summarizes lectures given in 91, but he calls these things MD algebras for whatever reason. And in the late 90s, Lowell Abrams proved that, as you would expect, Frobenius algebras in the category of K-vector spaces are simply Frobenius algebras over the field K. I guess this was a sort of folk theorem before. Okay, now if C is a K-linear tensor category and we have a Frobenius algebra, I call it strongly separable if it satisfies this additional condition. So the composition of the multiplication and the co-product and of the co-unit and the unit are scalar multiples of the respective identity morphisms of gamma and the tensor unit. Why would you want to define this? Well, if you have a Frobenius algebra over K, then it turns out that this Frobenius algebra is strongly separable in the classical sense of the theory of Frobenius extensions, if and only if, in this categorical form, your Frobenius algebra is strongly separable. Okay, now you can be interested in C linear categories where you have a star involution on the morphisms, like in C star or W star categories. And then I call a Frobenius algebra a Frobenius star algebra if the co-product is the star of the multiplication and the co-unit is the star of the unit. And in fact, strongly separable Frobenius star algebras have been introduced by Roberto Longo almost 10 years ago in for purposes of subfactor theory and conformal and quantum field theory. Okay, now we can prove some further facts. If you have a K-linear braided category and a strongly separable Frobenius algebra, well, then again, you can look at the category of left modules, which of course depends only on the monoid structure. And then you see that every left module is in fact a retract of f of x, where x is this free module functor. So you could say that the property of a monoid being part of a Frobenius structure is a sort of weak descent condition, to have used this word once at least. Now, if you have further properties, if you have a K-linear semi-simple braided category, which is rigid and where the tensor unit, the endomorphisms of the tensor unit are just K, if you have a strongly separable Frobenius algebra, which contains the tensor unit as a direct summand with multiplicity 1, Well, then it turns out that the category of left modules is semi-simple. It is rigid in the sense that it has two-sided duals. And you can even compute the dimension of the module category. By dimension, I mean the sum over the squared dimensions of the simple object in this category. This makes sense since we have, since also in the module category, the endomorphisms of the tensor unit are just the ground field K. And it turns out that this dimension is just the dimension of C divided by the categorical dimension of gamma. Okay. And if you have a C-linear category with star operation and your Frobenius algebra is a star algebra, then the category of modules is again a category with star involution. So let me make some brief remarks on Frobenius algebras and their significance. If you have a tensor category C, an object X which has a two-sided dual X bar, which of course, as you know, means that you have these four morphisms from the various tensor products to the tensor unit, and where E and D and E prime and D prime respectively satisfy the usual triangular equations. Well, then you can look at the object X bar tensor X, and it is trivial to see that this is part of a Frobenius algebra structure. The left duality gives you the monoid, the right duality, the co-monoid, or perhaps the other way around. And you also have this compatibility between both structures. And if C is K-linear and spherical, then this Frobenius algebra is also strongly separable, where the product of these two numbers, alpha, beta, is just the dimension of gamma. This is also very easy to see. Now, of course, you may ask whether every Frobenius algebra arises in this way. But it is very easy to see that this is not the case already in vect K. If X is a finite dimensional vector space, then the Frobenius algebra you get, X bar tensor X, is a matrix ring. But there are Frobenius algebras which are not of that form. But you can prove a theorem according to which every Frobenius algebra in a tensor category does, in a way, arise from a two-sided duality if you are willing to do the following. If C is a tensor category and gamma a Frobenius algebra, then you can construct a bicategory E, which has two objects called script A and B, such that the endomorphism category of one of those objects is equivalent to a given tensor category C. You have a pair of one morphisms J and J bar from A to B and the other way around, which are each other's two-sided duals. This gives rise to a Frobenius algebra in the endomorphism category of script A. And this Frobenius algebra is isomorphic to the image of gamma under this equivalence. So in this way, every Frobenius algebra does arise from a two-sided duality. Now, this thing has lots of applications, which I have at least some of them discussed in two excessively long preprints, which are going to appear in JPAA anyway. To give you just one example, if C is a K-linear, semi-simple, spherical category with finitely many simple objects, then you can prove that the center of this category, now understood to be as the braided center, which you know, has again all these properties, and its dimension is the square of the dimension of C. And this clearly is a generalization of what you have for finite dimensional Hopf algebras, where the quantum double, the dimension of the quantum double is the square of the Hopf algebra. Okay. But now let me switch subjects. Another situation where Frobenius algebra arise are in Hopf algebra theory. If H is a finite dimensional Frobenius algebra over K, and C is the category of left modules, finite dimension if you want, and gamma is the left regular representation, then you can put a Frobenius algebra structure on the object gamma. I'd put tildes on M and eta, since these are not the multiplication and the unit of the Hopf algebra, but for the coproduct and the co-unit, this is true. Eta tilde is just the multiplication of the scalars with an element capital lambda of H, which is a left integral in the usual way, but I'm not telling you how M tilde is defined. a little bit more involved. In any case, you have this Frobenius structure, and you can prove that it is strongly separable if and only if the Hopf algebra is semi-simple and co-semi-simple. So this turns out to be a fairly natural notion. And let me only very briefly tell you that this generalizes quite nicely to the infinite dimensional situation. But there you should work in the setting of algebraic quantum groups as formulated by Alphonse van Dahle, since Hopf algebras don't behave nicely under duality, whereas algebraic quantum groups do. And then it turns out that the left regular representation gamma is part of a monoid structure whenever your algebraic quantum group is discrete, and part of a co-monoid whenever it is compact. And it is finite dimensional if and only if it is compact and discrete, and in that case, you recover the structure which I just mentioned. But now I will be concerned only with the finite dimensional situation. Okay, so in particular, you can look at the case where G is a finite group, K is a field whose characteristic doesn't divide the order of the group, so you get a semi-simple symmetric tensor category. And again, the regular representation gives rise to a Frobenius algebra in S, which now is, in fact, also a commutative Frobenius algebra. And after all this, these preparations, we can consider an application. Namely, let C be a braided K-linear tensor category, and S a full subcategory, which is equivalent to rep K of G. Well, then we have the Frobenius algebra in S arising from the regular representation. Of course, this is also a Frobenius algebra in C, and we can consider the category of left gamma modules, and this I call the cross product of C by the symmetric subcategory S, for whatever reasons. But this is just the category of left modules over the regular representation of the symmetric category S. Okay, this is clearly a tensor category. It is semi-simple whenever C is. But it is also a G category, so you have an action of the group G, and by monoidal automorphisms, and the fixed subcategory is equivalent to C. In fact, you have a Galois correspondence between subgroups of H of G and intermediate categories sitting between C, which we consider as embedded into the cross product, and C cross S. And under this Galois correspondence, normal subgroups correspond to extensions by full subcategories of your given category S. But okay, this you can find in another paper of mine. Now the question is, in this concrete setting, can we say more concretely what the category of dyslexic modules is? Well, we can. We can consider the centralizer of the symmetric category S, as I have defined it before. Since S is symmetric, it is contained in the centralizer, and it, in fact, in its center. Okay. And then it turns out that the category of dyslexic modules is just the module category of gamma in this smaller category, namely the centralizer of the symmetric category S. In this category, gamma is central, and therefore this extension is, in fact, braided. So we have a more concrete description of the dyslexic module, but we would like to understand the full category and the full cross product CR times S in a better way. And now I claim, under all the assumptions we had before, the category of left gamma modules, or C cross S, is a semi-simple rigid braided cross G category. So, of course, I have to define this now. First, I need the notion of a G-graded category. Here I mean grading on the objects, not on the morphisms. So this is just a tensor functor from C into the discrete category G. Okay, now a cross G category is a tensor category with a G grading, with a G action by automorphisms, and you have this compatibility with both structures. Yesterday in Vitalis' talk, you have seen categorical cross modules, And this is a special case, namely where the category G is, the group point G is discrete. But we don't assume that the category C is discrete or a groupoid. Now, a braiding on a cross G category is a family of natural isomorphisms CXY from X tensor Y to this thing, tensor X, where this means the action on Y of the grade of X. So whenever you permute X with Y, X acts in a sense on Y. Okay, this definition is due to Turayev in the year 2000, and independently Carrasco and Moreno, but the latter authors assume considered only categorical groups, which Turayev didn't do. And now, okay, if every object in your monoidal category C is invertible, then you can easily hook up a cross module, but I'm skipping this. But now this definition is inappropriate if you want to deal with additive categories, since the direct sum of two objects with different grades is not a homogeneous object, so we need to generalize this slightly. Namely, an additive category is a braided cross G category if it has a full subcategory satisfying the previous axioms and such that every object in C is a direct sum of homogeneous objects. And then you can extend the braiding to the case where only X is homogeneous. Okay, and now you can prove the following. In the sense of this definition, this extension is a braided cross G category. Now you can say, you can speak of the grade G subcategories, and the grade E subcategory is just the Pareiges category of dyslexic modules. And you can speak of the spectrum of such a category. That is just a set of elements of G for which there exists a non-trivial object with grade G. And you can quite precisely compute what this is. The spectrum is a normal subgroup of G. It is trivial precisely if S is contained in the center of C. And you can also say when it coincides with G. But how am I doing time-wise? We started a bit late. Okay, let me just say that Turayev introduced braided cross G categories in order to define invariants of G manifolds, that is, three-dimensional G manifolds, that is, a three-manifold together with a principal G bundle on it, or what is the same, a homotopy class of maps from M into KG1. Now, it is known that categorical groups give rise to elements of the third cohomology group of a certain group G. And I'm being very brief now. If your categorical group is braided, then as you find in the paper by Joyan and Street, you get elements in the abelian cohomology of some group, where the abelian cohomology is the thing defined by Eilenberg-MacLane in 1950. And now this generalizes to braided cross G categories. But now you get a cohomology class in what is called the quasi-abelian cohomology of G. This is a new theory defined a few years ago by a guy called Ospel. Okay, this is again defined as cycles modulo boundaries. A cycle is a pair of a three cocycle on G, and sigma is a map from G times G to your coefficients, such that well, these conditions are satisfied. They are perhaps not very illuminative, but whenever your group G is abelian, all this reduces to the abelian cohomology of Eilenberg and MacLane. For example, here you have the property that omega and sigma are conjugation invariant, and this simply trivializes if G is abelian. Well, okay, and this H3 is not a hoc definition. You have a complex and get quasi-abelian HNs for all N. Okay, so now I can try to tell you in a few words how all this appears in conformal field theory. And now I don't know. Okay. First of all, you define what a conformal field theory is, which I'm not going to do. For me, this is a quantum field theory living on the circle, and you can give rigorous and precise axioms and so on. And it is known that such a thing gives rise to a braided tensor category of representations. And if you restrict yourself to representations which are finite dimensional in a certain sense, not in the sense that they live on finite dimensional spaces, then you get a representation category which is also semi-simple and rigid, so which are all properties you could possibly want. Now, physicists have the notion of rational conformal field theory. That is the theory which has only finitely many irreducible representations. This notion can be defined rigorously in the setting, and then one can prove lots of nice properties. I only mention that for such a theory, the center of the representation category is trivial, and that means that it is a modular category in the sense of Tourayev. This has nothing to do with the modular categories which have appeared here occasionally. It means that such a category gives rise to a finite dimensional representation of the modular group. Now, there is a notion of extensions of conformal field theories, in particular of finite extensions. And it has been known for some years that if you have a conformal field theory A, there is a bijection between finite extensions B of A and separable commutative Frobenius algebras in the representation category of A. And this can be connected with Parayge's definition of the dyslexic modules by proving that if your extension B is finite and corresponds to the Frobenius algebra gamma, then the representation category of B is just equivalent to the category of dyslexic gamma modules in rep A. Okay, I've dropped the last two transparencies and only tell you that if you have a conformal field theory which is acted upon by a finite group of symmetries, then you can define a category of twisted representations, and this turns out to be a braided cross G category whose grade E part is just the ordinary representation category. And then you can show how this braided cross G category is related to the one which you get as the cross product of C times S for suitable C and S. Okay. Thank you.